Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Wednesday, March 6, 2024. I'm your reader, Mary Frances, and you are listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. Taking a look at the front page of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald, we've got one, two, three big stories. First is East Dubuque Audit, $1 million deficit. Americana rocker band to take stage at Dubuque Casino, and AEA changes could impact childcare. So we'll start with the first story, the headline story, East Dubuque Audit, $1 million deficit. This is from Elizabeth Kelsey of TH Media. As East Dubuque officials continue to address the city's financial situation, a recently completed audit shows the city saw a deficit of more than $1 million in unauthorized fund disbursements by former city staff during the past fiscal year. City Council members this week approved the fiscal year 2023 audit, which was delayed because the city's books went unbalanced for nearly a year, beginning in August of 2022. The audit also flagged unauthorized pay raises for a former city manager and an improper severance agreement with a former employee. At the time of a fiscal year 2022 audit, the city's general fund had a deficit balance of $885,006, meaning the fund had been drawing on other accounts, including the city's tax increment finance account, to cover general operational costs. The audit, recently completed by a third-party accounting firm, shows that by the end of the fiscal year in April 2023, the general fund deficit had increased to $1,010,328 due to, quote, unanticipated city administration costs. Quote, the general fund has been operating at a large deficit for years, and city management is committed to returning the fund to a positive balance as our financial position improves, unquote. That's a city statement within the audit. The audit also found several anomalies in the city's financial record from fiscal year 2023, such as the city entering into a severance agreement with a former employee that never was approved by the city council. The employee in question, confirmed by city manager Bob Seitz after this week's meeting, is former city treasurer Joan Mai, that's M-A-I, also was paid for accrued benefits in excess of city policy, the audit states. Other actions that should have been approved by the council but were not included several fund transfers, disbursements, and multiple pay raises for an employee, the audit states. Seitz told the Telegraph Herald after the meeting that former city manager Loris Herrig received the unapproved pay raises. Herrig's contract with the city was terminated by the council in July. At this week's meeting, Councilmember Ben Meyer asked who had approved the pay raises and termination agreement. Seitz said the city manager at the time had done so. Seitz said after the meeting that Herrig had approved pay raises for himself. Councilmember Jean Roby asked whether Herrig's contract or any city ordinances allowed him to approve pay raises independently. Seitz said he did not see anything in the contract that would permit such a move, and city attorney Susan Hess said there was no authority for Herrig's actions. Quote, the council will have to discuss what, if any, action they want to take as a result of the audit findings, Hess said. When contacted by the Telegraph Herald, Herrig said he was not at liberty to comment on the situation due to possible litigation. Seitz said city officials are in complete agreement with the auditor's findings and recommendations and are instituting controls and procedures to prevent such issues from occurring again. He said the city recently purchased new software that will offer a more accurate, up-to-date picture of the finances. He personally is approving departmental expenditures, and city staff are implementing policies to ensure all regularly budgeted expenditures appear for council approval, and items that are unbudgeted or that exceed the budget receive council approval prior to expenditure. Quote, we're bringing things to the council and we've tried to be very transparent about everything we've done, Seitz said, later adding, I'm committed that the next budget will be balanced, and we'll have funds going toward getting us back to even on our general fund. Mayor John Digman said at the meeting that the outcome of the audit was expected. He emphasized that the city has been working for months to rectify the negative trend and will continue to do so. Quote, I'm pretty confident that a year from now, when we're sitting here, we're going to be in a hell of a lot better place than we are right now, he said. During the meeting, the council also accepted the resignation of City Treasurer Susan Lute, that's L-E-U-T-E, who has been employed by the city since November of 2022. Her last day will be March 29. Before the council voted on that resignation, Councilmember Delbert Belkin noted that Lute was the third treasurer to leave the city in less than 3 years. Mai, who held the position for 17 years, resigned in September of 2022. Her replacement, Jason Bevan, was employed with the city for only 3 days in November of that year, before tendering his own resignation, citing a toxic political climate at City Hall. Belkin said Lute was notified Friday that she could either resign or have her contract terminated, a detail Lute confirmed to the TH after the meeting. Belkin expressed his frustration at what he called a lack of training provided to Lute during her employment, which impaired her ability to do her job effectively. He also noted that the city was in a perilous financial position prior to Lute's hiring. This is what trainers are for, he said. This is what supervisors are for, and she had very, very little of either. Roby acknowledged that Lute was, quote, thrown to the wolves, and apologized to Lute for the lack of training. However, Roby said the council at the time of Lute's appointment, before Roby was a member, should have ensured city management gave her the training. Roby joined Meyer, Digman, and Councilmember Tim Fleur in voting to accept Lute's resignation, while Councilmembers Jeff Bergmeyer, Randy Degenhart, and Belkin voted against it. After the meeting, Lute told the TH she gave the job her utmost effort and behaved professionally, despite a lack of promised job training, and she received no warning prior to her potential termination. Quote, I came on knowing I was coming into a difficult situation, but I was told I was going to get training to help turn things around, and that never materialized, she said. During the meeting, Seitz thanked Lute for her service. Afterward, he told the TH that the city will seek someone with significant accounting experience to fill the post. Quote, local government has moved from requiring a bookkeeper to requiring an accountant, he said. You really have to understand what you're doing and what the controls are in order to implement them properly. Next story from the front page. Americana rocker and band to take stage at Dubuque Casino. An Americana rocker will appear with his band this summer at a Dubuque Casino. Jason Isbell and the 400 Unit will perform August 9th at Q Casino's Backwaters stage, according to an online announcement. This is a name that resonated with a lot of our customers, and he's just someone who we think is going to perform well here, said Alex Dixon, president and CEO of Q Casino and the DRA. It's great that we're fortunate to be able to land them. Isbell has won 6 Grammy Awards in American Roots and Americana categories for songs 24 Frames, If We Were Vampires, and The King of Oklahoma, as well as albums Something More Than Free, The Nashville Sound, and Weather Vanes. An Alabama native, Isbell joined Drive-By Truckers in 2001 and performed and recorded with the band through 2007. He released his first solo album in 2007. Weather Vanes is Isbell's 9th studio album and the 6th accompanied by his backing band, The 400 Unit. He has appeared as an actor in television and films, and appears in Martin Scorsese's Oscar-nominated Killers of the Flower Moon. Shemekia Copeland will appear in support at Isbell's concert. Copeland is a blues vocalist who has won 8 blues music awards. She's the daughter of Texas blues guitarist and singer Johnny Copeland. Her latest album, Done Come Too Far, was released in 2022. Tickets for the show go on sale beginning 10 a.m. Friday, March 8. You can learn more information at the website backwatersstage.com. Dixon said Q Casino has found great success with its Backwaters Stage concerts, so he anticipates a great turnout for Isbell's appearance. Last year's concert series featured a slate of concerts by notable artists that drew thousands of attendees, including a show by country and rap artist Jelly Roll that drew nearly 7,000 people. Isbell's appearance is the second Backwaters Stage concert announced for this summer. Officials previously announced an August 2nd concert by rapper and singer-songwriter Upchurch, with T2, Broadnax, and JJ Lawhorn performing in support. We look forward to offering another full slate of concerts this summer on our Backwaters Stage and hosting people from all over the tri-state area, said Brian Rakestraw, Chief Operating and Financial Officer at Q Casino. Having acts like Upchurch and Jason Isbell perform on back-to-back Fridays in August is just a glimpse of what we expect to be yet another great summer of live music across many genres here at Q Casino. Dixon said, organizers try to squeeze as many genres as possible into the summer's Backwaters Stage lineup, and he expects Isbell's sound to be a big hit with the tri-state area audience. Dixon said Q Casino has doubled down on prioritizing outdoor entertainment following the COVID-19 pandemic. He said the success of the concerts at Backwaters Stage fuels his confidence that a new outdoor amphitheater planned to be built over the former Greyhound Park will be a major success when it's completed in 2026. Quote, "We just continue to be encouraged by the support of the community, which has given us more confidence to keep bringing in great lineups and big names," he said. Next story from the front page. AEA changes could impact child care. Local child care centers use early intervention services from area education agencies. This from Elizabeth Kelsey of TH Media. As Iowa lawmakers continue debating potential changes to the state's area education agencies, local child care centers are concerned how operational shifts could impact the services and resources they currently receive from AEAs. Governor Kim Reynolds earlier this year proposed legislation to restructure the statewide system of AEAs, which provides programs and services such as special education, professional development, and educational materials for school districts. The Iowa House last month passed a bill mandating that AEAs continue to provide special education services and that school districts contract with them, but allowing school districts to look for other providers of media and general education services beginning in the 2025-26 school year. Districts could continue to work with AEAs through fee-for-service contracts, and while federal special education dollars would continue to go directly to AEAs, state and property tax funding for these services would go to school districts. Meanwhile, the Iowa Senate Education Committee has advanced a different, amended version of Reynolds' original proposed bill that was slated for full Senate debate on Tuesday. However, the chamber adjourned without debating the bill. While AEAs largely serve school districts, community child care centers also currently benefit from their programs and services. Key among them are the AEA's early intervention services for children from birth through age 3 who have a developmental delay or a condition that puts them at risk for such a delay. Annette Hyde, Director of Special Education for Keystone AEA, said these services are provided wherever and whenever is most convenient for families, which can be at any licensed child care center. If we have kids who maybe have a speech delay, a social delay, or a behavior issue, the AEA can send their specialist in to work one-on-one with them here, as opposed to them seeing the child in the home, because this is where the child is during the day, said Barb Myers, director of the Kid Project Child Care Center in Dyersville. Once a child turns 3, delivery of instructional special education services transfers to the student's school district, and early childhood consultants are assigned to community child care centers to help monitor those students. If students age 3 or older at a child care center need services typically provided by the AEA, such as speech, occupational, or physical therapy, the AEA staff will continue to provide those services. They also give us ideas for things that we can do throughout the week with the child, so we can keep helping with the services and keep that child on track, said Melissa Donovan, owner and executive director of Child Care Center ABC Learning in Dubuque. Barb Weber, co-director of Young'uns Preschool and Child Care Center in Dubuque, said the AEA also provides staff support and offers suggestions for working with students who have behavioral issues or other concerns. Certain child care centers also benefit from the AEA's media library of instructional materials, including books, puzzles, games, outdoor play equipment, and more that are available to districts statewide. To access those resources, child care centers must be community partners through the statewide voluntary preschool program for 4-year-old children. Districts that participate in the program, such as Dubuque Community Schools, receive state funds for students that are enrolled in the program, and those funds also help support preschool programs at community partner centers such as Young'uns and ABC Learning. At any center that has a 4-year-old preschool program that is part of Dubuque's statewide voluntary preschool program, teachers can request resources from Keystone AEA's media library. AEA vans arrive twice a week, pick up and drop off materials free of charge for the child care centers. These are extra supplemental supplies that give kiddos a chance to have materials we may not have on hand, said Deb McConnell, co-director of Young'uns. Hyde said the media library is funded through the state property tax dollars for special education that currently go to the AEAs, but would go to school districts under the house. The proposed shift to fee-for-service contracts for media and general education services could potentially mean child care centers lose access to those materials if school districts decide not to purchase them. Quote, if we're looking at having to charge to deliver those services, I fear if it will be doable for many schools and child care centers to purchase those, said Keystone AEA Associate Administrator and Director of Educational Services, Tesha Moser. The quote continues, when teachers have media delivery twice a week, they're able to keep novel items coming into the classroom. That's a really difficult thing to manage or purchase on your own, unquote. Leaders of local child care centers confirmed that their businesses could not afford to purchase the materials they currently borrow from the media library. It's a resource that we would be devastated without, Donovan said. And turning the page to the Dubuque and Tri-State, the first story, French language provides connection and mentorship for Platteville students. This is from Grace Nyland of TH Media, Dateline Platteville, Wisconsin. As Apollo Caesar, age 9, kicked around a multicolored ball at Westview Elementary School on Tuesday, it was clear that he'd had some practice. He dribbled this way and that, in between passes to another nearby student. Using one foot and then the other, the second grader kicked the ball higher and higher until he could bump it forward with his chest. He's a huge soccer fan, commented Brendan Millard, a Platteville High School senior, and one of Apollo's mentors. That's one of the first things we learned about him. Millard and fellow Platteville High School senior Maddie Freed, both age 18, met Apollo earlier this year when the younger student began classes at Westview Elementary shortly after Christmas. The young boy moved with his family to the area from Haiti, where he had grown up speaking French Creole. Millard and Freed were tapped to help Apollo acclimate to the Platteville district, thanks to their outgoing personalities and burgeoning French language skills. Both are now completing their fourth year of high school French. It seemed like it could be fun, said Freed, a member of the district's diverse student alliance. I wanted to be a teacher for a long time, and I've kind of headed toward a different path now, but I still have a lot of respect for kids and the people who work with kids. The trio meets weekly to play games, read books, or just chat over lunch, and will continue to do so through the end of the school year. In February, for example, they played a game of Connect Four, where each token dropped into the grid was paired with a card pulled from an alphabetical deck. For whichever card was pulled, the goal was to come up with a word that started with that letter. This week, Millard and Freed brought a book titled How the Waves Were Created, a Haitian Folklore. While the soccer game monopolized Apollo's attention on Tuesday, the goal is to use the book, which has English and French Creole portions, to further connect with the younger student and work on his English language skills. We're here to be friends first and tutors second, Millard said. We'll get there when he's comfortable. Prompted by Millard, Apollo shared that the word for friend in French is ami. Un ami, he said definitively, pointing at a nearby student that he'd grown close with to exemplify the concept. Platteville High School Principal Jacob Crace commended the seniors' efforts at Westview, adding that it exemplifies the kind of mentorship and friendship the district hopes to foster among its oldest and youngest students. The great thing about a peer mentorship program is that it impacts the current generation of high school students, but it also sets the foundation for the next generation to come up and be part of that program themselves when they get to high school. Next story. Prosecutor says Northwest Illinois educator engaged in sexual relationship with student. This is Dateline Scales Mound, Illinois. Prosecutors said a Joe Davies County woman who worked as a paraprofessional at an area school engaged in a sexual relationship with a student. Alicia J. Deckert, age 42, of Scales Mound, was charged this week with two counts of criminal sexual assault and two counts of aggravated criminal sexual abuse, according to a press release from Joe Davies County State Attorney Chris Allendorf. The charges stem from an investigation by the Joe Davies County Sheriff's Department and Elizabeth Police Department regarding Deckert, who reportedly had a sexual relationship with a student under the age of 18, the release states. The release does not state the school at which Deckert was working. Allendorf told the Telegraph Herald on Tuesday that he's not going to name the school right now. Charging documents also do not indicate Deckert's employer. Court documents state that Deckert engaged in the relationship with the student throughout the month of December. Allendorf said the alleged sexual activity did not take place on public school property. When reached by the Telegraph Herald on Tuesday, officials with the Joe Davies County Sheriff's Department declined to comment on the matter and referred all questions to Allendorf's office. And news in brief, this is Dateline Manchester, Iowa. A chart-topping, award-winning country artist will perform this summer at the Delaware County Fair. Brantley Gilbert will perform July 12 at the fair in Manchester, according to an announcement on Tuesday. Gilbert has won multiple awards, including Top New Male Artist from the Academy of Country Music in 2013. He topped Billboard's Hot Country Songs chart in 2011 with his singles Country Must Be Countrywide and You Don't Know Her Like I Do. He topped the chart again with Bottoms Up in 2013. His other hit singles include One Hell of an Amen, The Weeknd, What Happens in a Small Town. Gilbert co-wrote and originally recorded Jason Aldean's singles My Kinda Party and Dirt Road Anthem. His chart-topping albums include Just As I Am, The Devil Don't Sleep, and Fire and Brimstone. Tickets for his fair performance in Manchester will be available Saturday, March 9 at 9 a.m. Party pit tickets, $60, and are standing places in front of the stage. Track tickets are $50. Seating in the grandstand is free with admission to the fair. You can get more information at their website, DelawareCoFair.com. Our next brief, a Dubuque man has been sentenced to 5 years in prison for several assault charges across multiple cases. Brian T. Woods, age 44, recently received the sentence from Iowa District Associate Judge Robert Richter in Iowa District Court of Dubuque County after pleading guilty across three cases to charges of interference with official acts with a dangerous weapon, assault with a dangerous weapon, assault causing injury, and assault with intent to cause serious injury. As part of the plea deal, charges of second-degree kidnapping, domestic assault with display or use of a weapon, domestic assault causing injury, and two additional counts of domestic assault were dropped. The 5-year sentence will be served consecutively to a 15-year sentence previously imposed in a separate case against Woods. Court documents state that the majority of the charges stemmed from an October 15th disturbance in which Woods assaulted his live-in girlfriend and threatened her with a pocket knife at their residence. Woods then assaulted the woman's brother when he came to help his sister, the documents say. The assault causing injury charge was the result of an October 14 disturbance in which documents state that Woods assaulted another woman in his apartment building. The interference with official acts charge stems from an October 2022 incident in which court documents state that Woods brandished a knife at officers when they attempted to take him into custody on a theft charge. And turning to the Tri-State page, we'll continue with some briefs here. Two Dubuque veterans of foreign wars posts have consolidated into a single charter. Veterans of Foreign Wars Post 9663 has voted to consolidate into VFW Post number 508. That's Iowa's first and oldest VFW post. The post will now be called Leo A. Schwind Gerald F. Winter VFW Post number 508, Dubuque, Iowa. Post 508 recently announced the merger in a news release after the consolidation received approval from the National VFW. Work is now underway to merge financials, membership, and officers, the announcement states. Leo A. Schwind VFW Post 508 has been chartered in Dubuque since 1920, and its membership has fluctuated throughout the eras of different overseas conflicts. Post membership has experienced a recent decline, but the announcement states, but rather than losing the status of the first Iowa VFW post, Dubuque-based Post 9663 voted to consolidate its membership into Post 508. Next one, Dubuque Audubon Society plans annual excursion to Green Island. An event this weekend will highlight migrating waterfowl in the area. Dubuque Audubon Society will hold its annual duck waddle excursion Saturday, March 9, according to an online announcement. The free event is an annual trip to the Green Island Wildlife Management Area in Jackson County to observe migrating waterfowl. Green Island is one of Iowa's largest wetland complexes and attracts thousands of ducks, geese, cranes, and other aquatic-based birds every March. Audubon guides will be on hand to help identify the numerous species. Binoculars are recommended. Participants wishing to carpool from Dubuque are asked to meet at the Banworth and Udelhaven Funeral Furniture World on Bellevue Heights Road at 6 a.m. Otherwise, participants may meet the group at Green Island on Fish Lake Road, where it intersects with Green Island Road, between 6:45 and 7 a.m. Our next brief, Dateline Maquoketa. Friends of Jackson County Conservation is holding a native plant sale this spring. The plants will enable residents to incorporate native wildflowers, grasses, and other prairie plants into their gardens and yards. Plants are $3 each, and order forms are available at the Hurstville Interpretive Center on 63rd Street near Maquoketa. You can also do it online at this website, tinyurl.com/JAX native plants. Orders will be taken on a first-come, first-served basis while supplies last. Plants will also be available from May 24 to 26 at the Interpretive Center. If you would like more information, you can call this phone number, 563-652-3783. Another brief from Manchester. An informational meeting on the Delaware County's American Cancer Society Relay for Life event will be held this weekend. It will be Saturday, March 9, 9 a.m. in the Education Room at the Regional Medical Center in Manchester. Team captains and members are encouraged to attend. Light refreshments will be served. The event, the Delaware County's 14th Annual Relay for Life, is scheduled for June 28 from 5 to 10:30 p.m. at the Delaware County Fairgrounds. And another brief, Irish tea will be the focus of an event this weekend in Dubuque, Sunday, March 10 at the Matthias Ham Historic Site on Lincoln Avenue from 1 to 3 p.m. The event will feature an assortment of finger sandwiches and treats and a variety of teas and lemonade. The cost, $25 for adults, $15 for children. Members of the Dubuque County Historical Society will receive a $5 discount. And that's the halfway point of the reading of today's Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Wednesday, March 6, 2024. You're listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. I'm your reader, Mary Frances, and now we'll take a quick look at obituaries and then get back to news. Our first is Shirley A. Chapman, age 85, of Dubuque, passed away February 27 at Mercy One Dubuque with her family by her side. Visitation will be at the Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory on Rockdale Road on Sunday, March 10, from noon to 3 p.m. There will be a wake service at 12 p.m. Mass of Christian Burial will be Monday, March 11th at St. Raphael Cathedral at 10:30 a.m. with an entombment to follow at the Mount Olivet Cemetery. Next is Jack A. Edens. Jack Arthur Edens, age 89, passed away February 18th. He will be having a celebration of life Saturday, March 9, at the Crossroads Community Church in Galena. Visitation will be from noon to 3, with a church service and dinner to follow. So that's Saturday, March 9, noon to 3, at the Crossroads Community Church in Galena. Mary Lou Kulpinski, age 85, of Dubuque, formerly of Schulzburg, Wisconsin, passed away Saturday, March 2nd at the Bethany Home in Dubuque. Her services will be Friday, March 8, 11 a.m. at the St. Rose of Lima Catholic Church in Cuba City, Wisconsin. That will happen, I think I said, at 11 a.m. Burial will be in the St. Matthew's Cemetery in Schulzburg. Visitation will be at 10 a.m. Friday, March 8, from 10 a.m. until the time of services at the St. Rose of Lima Catholic Church. L. Hirsch, Jim Fred Hirsch, age 81, of Dubuque, passed away March 2nd at the Stonehill Care Center in Dubuque. Visitation, Thursday, March 7, 4 to 7 p.m. at the Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory on Rockdale Road, where a wake service will be held at 3:45 p.m. Mass of Christian Burial will be Friday, March 8, at the Holy Spirit Parish Sacred Heart Church at 10 a.m., Father Steve Garner officiating. Family and friends may visit after 9 a.m. at the church until the time of the Mass. Burial will follow at Mount Calvary Cemetery with military honors by American Legion Post Number 6. Rochelle M. Rise-Ernzen, age 64, of Asbury, Iowa, passed away Sunday, March 3rd at her home in Asbury after a courageous battle with cancer. Visitation, Thursday, March 7, at the Rife Funeral Home in Piasta, Iowa, from 4 to 8 p.m. Visitation will also be held after 10 a.m. Friday, March 8th, at the St. Patrick's Catholic Church in Dubuque. Services for Rochelle will take place on Friday, March 8th at St. Patrick's Catholic Church at 11 a.m. with Reverend Dennis Quint presiding. Burial will be at the Mount Calvary Cemetery in Dubuque. Stephen Dolter, age 68, died February 12th at Unity Point Health Finley Hospital. Memorial services will be held at a later date. Larry D. Riley, age 50, of Dubuque, died Sunday, February 25th. Celebration of life, Saturday, March 9, 4 p.m. at the Furlong Funeral Chapel in Galena, Illinois. Constance Connie Bastian, age 68, of Dubuque, passed away March 4 at the Ennoble Nursing and Rehab. Visitation will be today, March 6th, at the Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory on Rockdale Road from 4 to 7 p.m. Private burial will take place at Linwood Cemetery. Reverend Josephine Jo W. Green, age 81, of Dubuque, died Friday, March 1st. Visitation will be Saturday, March 9, at the Summit Congregational United Church of Christ from 9 to 11 a.m., followed by a memorial service at 11 a.m. Harold Robert McMillan, Jr., age 78, of Guttenberg, died Saturday, March 2nd. Celebration of life, Friday, March 8, at the St. John's Lutheran Church in Guttenberg from 4 to 7 p.m. It says services will take place at 10:30 a.m. Saturday, March 9th at the church. So it looks like the visitation will be from 4 to 7 Friday and the services on Saturday at 10:30 at St. John's Lutheran Church in Guttenberg. Diane M. Lucas, age 73, of Holy Cross, passed away March 4. Visitation, Monday, March 11, at the Kramer Funeral Home in Holy Cross from 2 to 7, and on Tuesday, March 12th from 9 to 10:30, followed by services at the Holy Cross Catholic Church. Burial will take place in the church cemetery. And Neil E. Ransford, of age 91, of Albuquerque, New Mexico, formerly of Dubuque, passed away Wednesday, February 28th. Visitation, Saturday, March 16th, at the St. John's Lutheran Church from 10 to 11 a.m., with services to follow. Burial will take place in the Linwood Cemetery. And turning to the opinion page, we have a political cartoon. It's one panel. It shows a football game. There is a football player down on the field. It says Trump on the back of his jersey. And there are two referees who have their backs to us. And on the back of each of their jerseys, it says Supreme Court. On the clock, it says fourth down, fourth quarter. Fourth down with 89 downs to go. And then the thought bubble says, the previous ruling is under review. The game clock will continue to run. Ha ha. And then the other referee has his hand on the Trump player's shoulder and it says, we've got you, buddy. So we'll turn to our letters to the editor. This one comes from James L. Vale of Carmel Drive in Dubuque. And he writes, I'm writing in response to Becky Sisko's March 3rd column in the Telegraph Herald, denigrating America's corporation. What is it that these leftists don't understand about the basic needs for businesses to make a profit? Do Becky and others of her ilk realize that these corporations are the lifeblood of America? They employ millions who pay taxes, buy homes and cars, support our schools, send their kids to college, and actually pay the tuition. They make countless corporate sponsorships and contributions. Her demands that government be more involved in regulating businesses reeks of failed socialistic norms, which have failed everywhere they are tried. If anything, we need less government interference in the private sector. When one examines how our leaders manage the doings in Washington, the last thing we need is having them tell us how to manage our businesses. In the words of President Ronald Reagan, the scariest thing an entrepreneur can hear is someone knocking on his door saying, "I'm from the government and I'm here to help." Making a profit is not a sin. Rather, it is the very fabric that built America. Maybe it's time for Cisco to take another look at enterprise in America and wake up to the realities of the real world. To quote President Reagan once again, he said, "Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem." And that letter to the editor, our only one today, came from James L. Vail of Carmel Drive in Dubuque. Our other view today, Becoming a Swifty Dad and Other Useful Skills I've Learned by Jace Graves. Having raised three daughters, I've gained, in the words of Liam Neeson, a very particular set of skills. Unfortunately, none of these skills would be useful in the event of an international kidnapping. Because two of our daughters and some of our credit cards are now in college and one is deep in the bowels of high school, I feel like an abandoned appliance that seemed pretty nifty at first, but the novelty quickly wore off. Think the Baby Yoda waffle iron. Below are a few girl dad skills I no longer use much, but I think they deserve some recognition, maybe in my obituary. Number one, I can style girl hair in various complex arrangements, especially the gymnastics class high ponytail and the ballet class bun. Number two, I can efficiently wash and fold sports bras and women's and girls' underwear. I still have trouble reinserting the bra pad thingies. Number three, speaking of underwear, I know that Victoria's Secret / Pink stores have additional inventory in the secret drawers. See what I did there? Under the display tables. Number four, I can navigate the feminine product aisle at Target with confidence and expertise. Number five, I no longer have to ask for directions in Ulta. Number six, I'm aware that simpin' is bad and riz is good, I think. Number seven, I can spot a fake Stanley cup a mile away. Number eight, I know the locations and prices of the most reputable nail salons in the area. Number nine, I know how to make a teenage boy nervous just by looking at him in the eye, shaking his hand and smiling. Number 10, I know how much a squishmallow or reversible plushie, usually gifted by a simpin' teenage boy, will bring at a garage sale. Number 11, I know the difference between ombre, highlights, and balayage, and that all of them will put me in debt. Number 12, I can order an iced caramel macchiato, a vanilla chai latte, and a double shot espresso with steamed oat milk without having any idea what exactly they are. Number 13, I can discreetly use a toilet plunger during a multi-girl sleepover without anyone identifying the guilty party. 14, I can invoke a teenage eye roll faster than you can say, "Hi, hungry, I'm dad." 15, I can name most of Taylor Swift's albums, probably in order. Yes, I'm a shameless Swiftie dad. My favorite songs are Style, All Too Well, Delicate, still waiting for Taylor's version, even though I don't understand most of the lyrics. In case you're wondering, I don't look to Taylor Swift for my politics, my worldview, or my NFL preferences. I just think her songs are catchy, and listening to them makes me feel a little less like I'm ready to pick out my embalming fluid. Although I sadly no longer use most of those skills, I'm going to try to stay sharp because I may have a granddaughter someday, hopefully far, far in the future. Until then, I'll be keeping it rizzy, and I'm still not sure that that's even a word. And this writer is an award-winning humor columnist from East Texas. And we'll go back to some local news from the Tri-State page. Police say man held woman at knife point and strangled her before their seven-hour standoff. Police said the man involved in a seven-hour standoff with Dubuque police held a woman at knife point and told her, quote, "Today is the day that you're going to die." Jacob T. Ginter, age 32, no permanent address, was arrested at 5:38 p.m. Monday in the 1100 block of Savannah Drive on charges of first-degree burglary, first-degree harassment, domestic assault while displaying a dangerous weapon, domestic assault with strangulation, domestic assault with injury, violation excuse me, of a no contact order in two counts of child endangerment. Court documents state the police responded at 10:16 a.m. Monday to the 1100 block of Savannah Drive for a report of a disturbance and a violation of a no contact order. When police arrived and knocked on the door to the residence, Abigail C. Coyle, age 30, immediately ran outside and had visible injuries to her face and neck, documents state. Police looked through a window and a door and identified Ginter as being inside the residence. Coyle told police that two children, ages 3 years old and 5 months old, were inside the residence with Ginter. Coyle told police Ginter arrived at the residence and began pounding on the door, documents state. The woman locked the front door and called a friend to call police. Ginter then removed a window and entered the residence, documents say. Ginter immediately attacked her by punching her in the face and strangling her, documents state. Coyle told police Ginter punched her face approximately 8 times, knocking her to the ground. Ginter then strangled her for approximately 20 seconds. Ginter told Coyle to clean herself up as she was bleeding from the nose, the documents say. Coyle went into the kitchen to wipe her nose. Ginter punched her once in the nose and grabbed a steak knife. He held the tip of the blade to her right armpit and told her, "Today is the day you're going to die," documents state. When police arrived, Ginter locked the door and refused to leave the residence, prompting an approximately 7-hour standoff with police. Police negotiated with Ginter, or were granted a search warrant and an arrest warrant, and took him into custody without incident, and it shows a mugshot of the young man, Jacob T. Ginter. Next story from the Tri-State page. Council seeks public input on FY25 budget. A series of public meetings on the City of Dubuque's proposed budget for the next fiscal year will be held in the coming weeks. The Dubuque City Council meetings are part of the process to create the budget for fiscal year 2025, which starts July 1. City leaders encourage area residents and stakeholders to attend the meetings to provide input or reach out to council members directly, according to a news release. All meetings will be held at 6:30 p.m. in the City Council chambers on the second floor of the historic Federal Building at 350 West 6th Street. The meetings will also be shown live on Mediacom cable channels 8 and 117.2 and I'm on channel 5 on the city's website at cityofdubuque.org/media and on the city's Facebook page at facebook.com/cityofdubuque. The meeting schedule is as follows. On March 7, City Manager Mike Van Milligan will make a property tax amount and levy recommendation. On the March 18th, recommended budget presentation at the regularly scheduled council meeting, March 25. I think there should be a period there, at the regularly scheduled council meeting period. March 25, public hearing to establish the maximum property tax amount for fiscal year 2025. March 26, budget proposals for the City Attorney's Office, City Clerk's Office, Public Information Office, Human Resources, City Manager's Office, and City Council. March 27, budget proposals for Health Services, Carnegie Stout Public Library, Dubuque Regional Airport, Office of Shared Prosperity and Neighborhood Support, Office of Equity and Human Rights, and Finance/Budget. March 28, budget proposals for Housing and Community Development, Purchase of Services, Public Works, and Economic Development. April 2nd, budget proposals for Parks, Recreation, Office of Community Impact, and the Multicultural Family Center. April 4, budget proposals for Emergency Management, Emergency Communications, Police and Fire. On April 8th, they'll hear budget proposals for Information Services, Water, Water and Resource Recovery Center, and planning. On April 9th, budget proposals for the Five Flags Center, Grand River Center, Imon Arena, transportation services, and engineering. In April 11th, public hearing to adopt the fiscal year 2025 budget. Residents seeking more information or who want to submit a comment can do so at this website. It is cityofdubuque.org/FY2025budget. And a little bit of sports, and we always go with local whenever possible. Senior versus Ankeny, Iowa Class 4A State Quarterfinal. This is boys prep basketball. This is from Danny Miller of the TH Media. Dubuque Senior is back again for the 9th time overall and 7th under head coach Wendell Eimer's reign. The Rams are ready to make another run at their first state championship. Today's 12-15 quarterfinal contest with Ankeny will be the first ever meeting between the Rams and the Hawks in the state tournament, but it will feature a local connection. Dr. Dan Johnson held various roles during a 20-year stint at Dubuque Senior, including 10 years as principal, before departing for the same role at Ankeny in 2022. Here's a preview of today's state quarterfinal contest between the 4th-seeded Rams and 5th-seeded Hawks. The Iowa High School Sports Network will broadcast all 28 games from the state tournament. MediaCom Channel 22 championship games were scheduled for, they'll be on Cedar Rapids-based KFXA and Davenport-based WQAD. On the radio, you can listen at KDTH AM 1370. Dubuque Senior's record, 21-2 overall, 13-2 Mississippi Valley, first place in the division. And some other local sports. Hempstead's Leetson wins Dickinson Relays title. Keely Leetson did what she does, win. Dubuque Hempstead's Leetson finished in 2 minutes and 21.13 seconds to claim the 800-meter championship at Tuesday's indoor season opening Dickinson Relays in Cedar Falls. Western Dubuque's Bryn Walters was tops among three area athletes in the 60-meter dash finals and added a top six finish in the 200. Walters finished sixth in the 200 in 26.67. Teammate Allie Graber, 27.88, was 17th, followed by Maquoketa's Cora Weidel at 27.90. Hempstead's Mallory Tompkins, was 26th in 28.21. The Mustangs 4x200 relay of Anderson, Tompkins, Maddie Leeser, and Osterkamp placed 9th in 1 minute 52.57. In men's volleyball, Mount Mercy 3, Clark 1 at Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Justin Hernandez floored 11 kills, but the Pride, 5-10 and 2-5 in the Heart of America Conference, lost to Mount Mercy 25-18, 24-26, 25-14, and 25-19. And we've burned up just about all the time we have to read the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for today, which is Wednesday, March 6, 2024. I'm your reader, Mary Francis, and you've been listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. Have a great day. Thank you.
In Africa, 5-year-old Charu has no choice. She and millions like her must walk miles every day for dirty water. But together, we can end their walk by providing clean water close by. Instead of spending hours walking to get water that makes them sick, girls can be in a classroom that expands their minds, and moms will gain back time to care for their families. Sons and daughters can grow up strong, finally free of sicknesses caused by dirty water. At World Vision, care about clean water runs deep. Deep enough to reach one new person with clean water every 10 seconds. Because every child, every person, everywhere deserves clean water and the chance to rise to their full potential. It's true. When you just add water, you change a life. Learn more at worldvision.org.